It's Wednesday, the 16th of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Alexei Shved. Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Shauno47295572. If you want to be like Shauno47295572, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and we're perilously close to the 300 iTunes review mark. We're at 299 at the moment, so looking forward to that next person to drop a review. It's always fantastic. It's always fantastic for me. You get to sponsor the podcast for a day, and you help the show grow and continue to get better and better, I hope. Make sure you're also checking out moneyball.com.au, Australasia's only daily fantasy sports site. Get involved with that and win yourself hopefully some money. Had a pretty good day today on Moneyball. And I hope most of you guys did pretty well in your daily fantasy leagues and in your seasonal leagues. All right. Had someone tweet at me today and said that they hadn't heard the Michael Bolton drop on the podcast. Rest assured that it is here. Yeah, I didn't miss an episode. I'm not sure how that they missed it, but hey, let's do what Michael says.
Let's get to it.
Thank you, Mick. The monstrous line of the night, Rudy Gay. There was always going to be a lot of fantasy value in this Sacramento Houston game. We saw it here. It was great for fantasy, for daily fantasy. Rudy Gay was fantastic. 17-13. He hit a couple of threes, had three assists, a career high six steals, blocked a shot, went 6 of 11 from the field. You aren't all that happy with his 3 of 5 from the free throw line, nor his 5 turnovers. But overall, I think he was the most impactful fantasy player of the day. And without Rajon Rondo, a lot of that value got spread around to quite a few other areas. And Gay was the major beneficiary. Hopefully you used him in your daily fantasy lineup today. He had a bit of a rocky start, but I think he's starting to come good this season. He's putting numbers sort of where you'd expect them. And I think if you looked at his recent numbers, he's inside the top 20 the last 2 weeks, averaging 17, 7.5, 1.5 threes, 2.2 steals on 49% shooting, which is a little bit un-Rudy Gay-esque. But otherwise, I think that's the thing with drafting him. You're going to get this rock solid guy who gives you numbers and is generally underrated. And I think he's probably a bit underrated at the moment. So you're pretty happy with what he's giving you at this present moment in time. The waiver wire line of the night is from the same game. It's a guy that plays basically the same position as Rudy Gay, and it's Omri Caspi. He played 38 minutes here. He went 19-6-6. He hit 3 triples, had 2 steals, and was a super efficient 8 of 11 from the field. Caspi has entered the starting lineup with the Willie Cauley-Stein injury, and he's been great. He's a guy that I think has to be owned everywhere. Yeah, he'll probably lose some value when Cauley-Stein comes back, but Cauley-Stein wasn't playing well beforehand. Kufos has been marginalized significantly. George Karl is a lot happier seemingly running Caspi out there, even if he comes off the bench. He's playing 36 minutes a game over his last 2 weeks, 15-6 with 2 threes, half a steal, 3 assists on 48% shooting. Yes, his free throws are very worrisome in terms of he's only hitting 56% this year, but the other numbers are great. And if you can absorb, and it's not on big attempts, 3 attempts a game is not horrible. It can be absorbed by a strong free throw team. Otherwise, Omri Caspi has value in even 10-team leagues at the moment. He's playing that well, and I imagine he'll continue to a certain degree. Maybe in a month's time, we might look at Omri Caspi and go, yeah, he's on the verge. Maybe we drop him. But for now, he's a very, very strong hold and a very strong add for every league, basically. The young gun of the night, we'll slip away from the Sacramento-Houston game, and we'll go to Karl Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves, another young gun of the night title for him. 18-6 in 28 minutes, a steal and 2 blocks, hit all 8 of his free throws, went 5 of 7 from the field. Thankfully, he played 28 minutes, even though he accumulated 4 fouls. And there's talk coming from Sam Mitchell that the Timberwolves are going to change their lineup and their rotation. Fingers crossed, this means no Tayshaun Prince, your minimal Kevin Garnett, even though he only played 13 minutes here. And they run their best players, Towns, Rubio, LaVine, Jeng, Wiggins. That's their best 5. Those guys should be getting 30 minutes each. That's, you know, and then these other guys, Kevin Martin can get whatever mop-up minutes there are. Kevin Garnett can play to his 12 minutes. And these other guys just play minimal playing time. Give your 5 best players the 5 most amount of minutes. and give them decent minutes, make them play 30 minutes each, and I think you'll find you've got a pretty strong team on your hands. So I think that that's, although look, Sam Mitchell does things that are quite frankly baffling at times. I don't know what's taking him so long to realize that he should have Levine out there and he should have Jeng out there much more than he currently is. Let's hope that this so-called lineup change that's coming, you know, addresses these problems that this team has got. And I think that obviously Jeng needs to be owned in fantasy leagues, and so does Levine. And I think that that will only go up for these guys. As for Towns, he's a 15-9 guy this season, 2.2 blocks, 0.7 steals and 0.3 threes on 54 and 84. He's been just incredible. He's a massive show to be a top 20 player by the end of this season. Just a really, really fantastic season from Karl Anthony Towns. The dud of the night goes to Jared Sullinger of the Boston Celtics. Not a good night for Sully. He played 23 minutes, which is sort of, you know, normal for a Brad Stevens forward. 5-5 on 2-9 shooting and 1-2 from the free throw line. He had a really strong stretch to start the season. He has definitely cooled off. He's only averaging 6.7 points across his last 2 weeks. There is 10 rebounds there and a block a game, but a lot of this is due to the fact that his shot is just horrible at the moment. He's shooting 29.5% across his last 7 games. If that goes up to 45, then we're talking about a guy who's averaging 12-10, and then it becomes, you know, a lot more palatable. So I can understand looking to drop Sullinger. I'm definitely not. Him and Olynyk, I've said it a million times, they're the most talented guys on this in this front court, and they should be getting 27 minutes plus each. The chances of it happening are probably low, but I imagine that Sullinger still keeps getting that 26-27 minute run, so I am holding him. Unless there's someone red hot that you want to go and pick up, I'm all for... If Gorgui Jeng's out there, I'd be okay dropping Sullinger for Jeng, because I think that Jeng is showing what sort of value he can have, and Sullinger's probably a little bit more muddled, but doesn't mean that Sullinger's a guy that has to be dropped in leagues or anything along those lines. The daily fantasy value play of the day... And if anyone had this in their lineups, congratulations. Randy Foy, 3,500 for Randy Foy, and he put up 27.4 points. He had been basically doing nothing until this game. He had 19 points with 5 triples, 2 assists, and 2 steals. And Mike Malone is becoming increasingly frustrating as a fantasy coach to deal with his odd rotations, baffling rotations. I don't know what they are. They're something. They're definitely something about them. And being able to predict what's going to happen in Denver on a nightly basis is getting up there with predicting what Sam Mitchell's going to do or Jason Kidd or Scott Skiles. And to be honest, Malone's rotations are probably even more unpredictable than all of those guys. So it makes it a real tough sort of situation to latch onto guys in DFS, to make ownership or waiver claims in guys in seasonal leagues because of the way that Malone is running things there at the moment. It is extremely frustrating for our point of view, and I'm sure he doesn't give two shits about that. All right, let's now look at these box scores in that a little bit more detail. There was only 4 games, so I don't imagine this is going to take us a massive amount of time to get through. The first game, I'll make that a little bit bigger for you guys watching. There we go. So that was riveting radio for you guys not watching the video. But anyway, let's get back into it. The first game of the night was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. Kevin Love mentioned there was a chance that he had a pretty big game here because he wants to go out and show the Celtics up after this, you know, deliberate shoulder dislocation that he suffered. I'm rolling my eyes even though you can't see my face. 20-8 for Love, 3 threes, 5 assists, 1 steal and 2 blocks. That's a huge, huge line for him. And Timofey Mozgov was also really good. Being able to predict when Timofey Mozgov is going to be good is a lot harder than predicting Kevin Love. 9-10 for Mozgov with 3 blocks. The inconsistency just means that we don't need to touch that. LeBron James, 24-7, 2 steals and a block. And J.R. Smith, 36 minutes in the start, 9-6. But he got extra run because Iman Shumpert lasted just 14 minutes before suffering a groin strain. It doesn't appear to be like too serious of a groin strain. He'll likely be back by the weekend, which is good for a guy that's just returned after that wrist issue. He wasn't someone that we wanted to add in 12-team leagues anyway, but this is just going to give an extra, with Kyrie returning as well, some extra minutes for Dellavedova, for Williams, and for Smith until Shumpert returns over the weekend. Now, Dellavedova played 28 minutes, 2 points and 4 assists. Kyrie will be back either the next game or the game after, so Dally can be moved on from. And Mo Williams played just 19 minutes without Kyrie, so there's not much point in holding. And by not much, I mean there's 0 point in holding onto Mo Williams in a standard league. Tristan Thompson, this is a very Tristan Thompson line. 0 points, 9 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals, 0 blocks. Yeah, he's a great streaming option for boards, but he's providing almost literally nothing else at this point. On the Celtics, Avery Bradley's big season continued, 17-3, 3 triples, 3 steals, 2 blocks. That is a huge performance. He's clearly a must-own player. Jay Crowder went 14 points with 4 threes and a couple of blocks as well. Nice nights there. But the rest of the Celtics guys, they got beaten pretty comprehensively. There's not much to really get excited about. Isaiah Thomas shot 3 of 15, that's yuck, for 12 points with 4 assists. And everyone else's minutes were spread all over the place. Kelly Olynyk couldn't get his shot to fall in his 22 minutes. At least he's still got 22 minutes. Evan Turner went 6-8-4 in 27 minutes. And he's a back-end 12-team league guy to me. And look, not much else to really talk about. The game was a blowout. They scored 77 points. They shot 32% from the field. It was just very, very ugly if you're a Boston fan or if you own any of their players in fantasy. The next game was Denver versus Minnesota. Kenneth Faried got back to 28 minutes after playing less than 20 in the last game. Again, Mike Malone, I can't work him out. 19-10 for Faried with 3 blocks, which is a definite bonus. Jimmy Nelson, after playing over 30 minutes in the previous two games, well, he played just 23 here. And it wasn't like he was terrible. 10-3-4 with 2 steals and 2 threes on 4 of 7 shooting, so he was efficient. He did have 4 fouls, so that limited him a bit. And Randy Foy was hot, so that obviously impacted in that sort of area. But Still not what we wanted from a Jameer Nelson. Will Barton got 31 minutes again, 14-7-5, no steals, no blocks, but still, yeah, he's continuing to be almost their best player, amazingly. 15-3-5 for Danilo Gallinari, and Gary Harris, after 2 games of 40 minutes in a row, played 24. Yeah, of course he did. 4 points and 2 rebounds and nothing else. If you're excited by what you saw from Harris before, don't let this dissuade you, but there are going to be ups and downs, definitely. He's going to have games where he struggles. And I think that he was limited because Randy Foy was playing well as well. What about the mess at the center position? Joffrey Lavernier, 16 minutes for 11-7. Nikola Jokic, 21 minutes for 6-3 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. So both of those guys, that's really good value. But this is the sort of, today was the day where, you know, if you've got a waiver claim, maybe you could claim one or two of them. Add them onto your team when you've got these open roster spots or open active slots. But then holding on to them, it's very hard to do because it's unlikely they're going to demand a spot in your best 10 players. And you never know which one of them is going to be that guy that would demand that spot. And then when Yusuf Nurkic returns, Nurkic is still the best player out of this lot. But how long does it take him to ramp up to full minutes? And what does full minutes even mean? Very, very murky. Onto the Minnesota Timberwolves, Ricky Rubio, 13-4-9, a good night from him, and Zach LaVine went 24-5 with a triple one. He had a great night as well. He took the most amount of shots on the team, Zach LaVine. As I mentioned before, he's a must-own player. His minutes should go up, and he's starting to rack up some pretty nice numbers. Gorgui Dieng, 4 points only for him, but 9 rebounds, 2 steals, a block. That's where his value comes from, so I'm really excited to see what happens with this Timberwolves roster. No doubt Sam Mitchell will stuff it up for everybody, though. And Andrew Wiggins, Big Andy. Someone tweeted me the other day, what would Andrew Wiggins' nickname be if he was Australian? I'd like to hear some thoughts from some other Aussies. I'm pretty sure it'd be Wiggo. Maybe. I don't think it'd be Wiggy, would it? It'd be Wiggo. Andy Wiggo. Yeah, let's go with Wiggo. So Wiggo had 23 points. He hit a 3. He had 1 rebound, 1 assist, and 1 block. Just continues to be an underwhelming fantasy player. Great for 20 points a game. Fantastic. Just does nothing in any other area, really. So that limits his ability to be a real fantasy star. Matt Smith had some interesting tweets, so you can go check them out at S-Man Sports about some of Wiggins' stats coming up. I think that Matt's writing today's morning update article on Basketball Monster as well, and he's going to be including some nice Wiggins stats there. So I don't want to spoil it too much there. So go and have a read of what Matt put out. Kevin Martin played 22 minutes. 2 points and 3 assists after a real hot streak. This was the concern with him. Yes, he was hot, and Mitchell was going to ride him while he was hot, but we never knew when that was going to end. Ended here, and there's a massive chance that LaVine just continues to take these minutes away from him, as he should. The next game up is the Houston Rockets and the Sacramento Kings. James Harden, pretty good game, 33-7-6 with 4 triples. Trevor Ariza went 10-6-2 with 3 steals, and they're doing basically what they should be doing. Pat Beverley, 14 points, 3 steals, and 2 threes. Again, that's exactly what you want from him. You don't need any more. That's exactly what you need. How about the power forward spot? This is the concern. Donatas Motiejunas started, played 14 minutes, and went 4-3 with 3 steals. Clint Capela went 4-9 with a steal and a block in 13 minutes, and Terrence Jones played 13 minutes and went 1-4. I think we can safely say that Terrence Jones is no good and he shouldn't be owned in 12-team leagues. Capela and Monty Unis, they're going to continue to split time. I'm pretty confident with that. And it's going to be real hard to own them in 12-team leagues. You can definitely own Capela for his ability to get some blocks and rebounds, as we saw here. But overall, his numbers will suffer with the way this is happening. So if there's someone else that you want, I can understand definitely moving on from those guys. And I'm not, you know, racing out to grab Monty Unis. Ty Lawson played a whopping 7 minutes. Just another indication that he doesn't need to be owned anywhere. And Dwight Howard played 28 minutes in the back-to-back. 4 points, 4 rebounds. Not good. On to the Sacramento Kings. Without Rajon Rondo, Darrick Collison played 41 minutes and went 14-7-13 with a 3 and a steal. It just makes you think, is it Rondo? Is it the system? Is it his teammates that's providing the big numbers? Because Collison's basically done exactly what Rondo does in 41 minutes. That's very, very similar to what Rondo would do, except Collison's a more efficient shooter. Despite Rondo's bounce-back season and good numbers, I still maintain that he's probably not as good of a point guard as what Darren Collison can be for this team, but Collison will go back to the bench. And this just shows the sort of upside that Collison has. He's still a back-end 12-team league guy in his 27 bench minutes, but obviously when he starts, then we're talking top 50 upside from him. Boogie went 26-12 with a couple of threes and a couple of steals. A good night from him, and not much else to really pay attention to here. Marco Bellinelli had 9 points in his 27 minutes, and they came all off threes, but he is only a deep league target who is very, very inconsistent. The last game of the night was the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Lakers. We heard that General Grievous Vasquez is out for the next 3 to 4 months with ankle surgery, so he's out of that point guard rotation. The Lakers smashed the Bucks by 20 points. So the Bucks beat the Warriors and then get smashed by the Lakers, of course. Of course they do. Michael Carter-Williams played 32 minutes off the bench. He's getting back to his stat-stuffing ways. 19-5-5, 2 steals and a block. While OJ Mayo, who started, played just 27 minutes and went 9 points, 2 assists, 2 steals and 2 threes. Now, Mayo's shot wasn't falling. He was still getting plenty of shots and decent minutes, so he still needs to be owned. But obviously, Carter-Williams has to be owned as well. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 15-6-5. Nice night there. And Greg Monroe, a really late scratch, which obviously was surprising. We had no idea that that was going to happen. And John Henson started, still only played 24 minutes, racked up 4 blocks in that time, 6-4. Yes, the block potential is beautiful, and he's a great streaming block guy. But when Greg Monroe's out and he only plays 24 minutes, there's definite dislike of him from Jason Kidd. Miles Plumlee played more minutes than John Henson. Yeah. 10-8 for Miles Plumlee with a block. And big Johnny O'Brien played 20 minutes for 6 points and 7 rebounds. Nice night from Chris Middleton too. 16-2-4 with a couple of threes and a couple of steals. On to the Los Angeles Lakers. D'Angelo Russell went back to the bench. So, of course, he played 30 minutes after Byron Scott said that, you know, he's only going to play 21 to 25 minutes or whatever number he said. Great night line from Russell, 19-4-7, 2 threes and 3 steals. He's really racking them up, clearly a must-own player. Whereas Julius Randle, the other bench guy, had 25 minutes, 14-14, and actually decent percentages, but we know what he is. He's points and rebounds and not much else. He's going to fluctuate. Russell is probably going to be more steady. He'll fluctuate as well, though. Kobe Bryant, 22-3-6, a clearly different role for Kobe now since he's announced his retirement. He's distributing the ball more. He's not taking as many bad shots. I've said it a million times. Kobe has to be owned. Lou Williams, 16-3-4. A good night from him. He's a guy that I like owning too. And a big double-double from Roy Hibbert, 12-11 in his 24 minutes with a block. That's pretty good numbers there. Jordan Clarkson returned to action after missing a couple with that sprained ankle. 12-6 with 3 steals and 3 assists. So some nice value from him as well. And I reckon that just about does it. Okay, let's have a quick break, get myself set up for the next part of the podcast where we're going to talk about the 12 games for Wednesday from a daily fantasy point of view. I saw your picture today, got me thinking about the things that I would say, but I know you're happy now when you're someplace far away, 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 and I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street and I wonder if I'll ever meet again without a second glance. All right, guys, let's get into these 12 games and start looking at this. Is a huge DFS slate. So you're going to have the early game tournaments and contests, the late game tournaments, the turbos, all that sort of stuff. Plus, you're going to have the ones that include all of the games. So make sure you're looking at what you're doing and trying to work out where you can best get value. And it's going to give you a bit of an ability to diversify a little bit as well. The first game is the Dallas Mavericks and the Indiana Pacers. Paul George is probable. He missed practice due to an illness. Now, from all accounts, he's going to play. But we've seen guys who have been ill and then played, and they play sort of two, three, four less minutes and don't quite look as good. So that's going to make Paul George a difficult guy to invest $9,400 in. Also throwing the fact that he's been struggling lately, only averaging 27 points across the last three games. The illness, not a good spot for Paul George here. Chandler Parsons at 4,200. He's a mildly intriguing tournament guy, but I'll probably steer clear of him. The minutes were up to 28 in the last game, so that's probably the most enticing thing here. George Hill is also strictly a tournament guy. He's been really struggling, but this is a pretty easy matchup for him. And if Paul George is struggling a little bit, you'd think that George Hill will have to take over a little bit more, get a little bit more usage, and handle the ball a little bit more also. So there's something to think about with George Hill. Wes Matthews at 5,500, I reckon he's pretty rock solid at that. He's going to have some nights where his shot doesn't fall, but this is a situation where I think we can use him. Darren Williams at 7,000. He's averaging basically 30 a game across his last three. His minimum score is just 24 across his last five, so that's not a bad floor there. 7,000, I would like it under 7,000. I think he's an okay play, but he's not the greatest. Whereas Ray Felton at 5,100, he is averaging 32. He's got a floor of 26.7 across his last five. Do you think he can continue it? This is a tough matchup. The Pacers do shut down point guards to a degree. He's been playing a lot of off-ball as well, so that's going to impact him. But it's very hard to avoid using Ray Felton given the way he's been playing and given the way the Mavericks have been using him as well. I don't imagine that we're going to see as bigger games out of Jordan Hill and LaVoy Allen that we saw last time. Hill got 37 points, LaVoy Allen got 24. I don't imagine that that's going to be too much in play in this game. And Zaza Pachulia at 6,200. Yeah, it's probably a little bit expensive for me. And Monte Ellis at 5,900. I actually don't mind Monte at 5,900. He's averaging 30.8. Probably more of a tournament guy because he has had a few sort of swings in his performance. But he's been almost averaging 31 across your last three at 5,900. Makes him definitely come into play. CJ Miles at 5,300. Nah, it's a tournament guy in case he gets hot, which we know that he can. But he got hot in the last game. So to think he's going to do it in two games in a row is probably a little bit of wishful thinking. The Charlotte Hornets and the Orlando Magic is up next. We don't have a spread released for this one just yet. I really like Jeremy Lin here at 4,700. He's averaging 21.6 across his last three. His minutes have been way up. He played over 30 in the last one. It's an easier matchup for point guards against the Magic. He's been playing some two as well. I don't think he's a must play, but he's going to have low ownership, I'm pretty sure. I reckon he could be an interesting player. Cody Zeller is still under 4,000. When he doesn't battle foul trouble, you can get 20 points out of him pretty comfortably. So I'm okay using him again against a Magic team who do allow point power forwards to play pretty well. Frank Kaminsky at 3,800 is actually averaging more fantasy points than what Cody Zeller is across the last three games, but his minutes are probably less secure because if Zeller stays on the court, Kaminsky is just not going to get the same playing time. Marvin Williams has been in a rut at 4,800. Not a massive fan there. And Nick Vucevic at 3,100. We can look at Vucevic's last couple of games and go, this is not ideal. But they've both been blowouts. A blowout win and a blowout loss. When the games are close, if you look at Magic recent history, he plays 32, 33 minutes in those games. So I think that he could be intriguing at 7,300. He could easily drop a 35-point game here. Not overly confident in it, though, especially against a Hornets team, which is not a good matchup for opposition centers. Lord Alfred Payton's been pretty awesome as well lately. 6,800, though, is probably a little bit difficult for me to think about spending that money. Don't want Victor Oladipo. Don't want Toby Harris. Nick Batum at 7,400. He's been really good this season. We know that he's averaging 35 across the last five games. Yeah, a really good floor at 27.8. He's a solid cash game play for me. And Kemba Walker at 7,900. That's 7,900. It's almost 8,000 if you can do simple maths, which I'm sure you can. it's a simple matchup. Not simple, that's the wrong word. Point guards go very well against Orlando. He's been very, very good this season. Averaging almost 40 across the last three, or 38 he's at. There is some use there, but I just don't... It's going to be hard for him to get to that number. I think it's a difficult match. It's a difficult situation at that salary, an easy matchup, not the most ideal one, but I can understand using him, and I would definitely consider him myself. Boston and Detroit is the next one up. The Pistons are favored by 2.5. The total here is 199.5 points. Let's have a look what we can get out of this one. Kelly Olynyk remains only a tournament player at 4,500. We know that there is definite fluctuation from him. He only put up 9.4 points today, which is nothing you want anything to do with in a cash game. Much like Orlando, in games where it's close, the Pistons run a different rotation. Their big guys, well, their starters get bigger minutes. Marcus Morris will see more run. Andre Drummond will see more run. Reggie Jackson will see more run. Reggie Jackson at 7,800, I think, even though Boston do shut down point guards, I don't hate using Reggie Jackson here. I could probably find value in other spots, but I think Reggie Jackson's worth considering. I like Drummond a lot at 9,100. I think he's pretty much a lock for 40 points here. And Marcus Morris at 5,700, that's not an expensive price tag. Can he get you 27 points, 28 points? I think he should do that pretty comfortably. I reckon this is not a bad spot for him. Ersan Ilyasova remains only a tournament play. He only put up 13 in the last game, but it's not a situation where, like that thing when he played the Clippers and he had to guard Blake Griffin. Like, he's going to be guarding Jared Sullinger or Amir Johnson or Kelly Olynyk. It's not the same. Ilyasova can hang with those guys. So he could get back up to that 27-minute mark, and then we could be looking at a guy who's going to drop 27 fantasy points, and he's less than 5,000. He's definitely someone to pay attention to, and power forwards do thrive against the Celtics. So not a horrible spot there for him. 5,800 for Avery Bradley. He's been cooking lately, been putting up some really strong numbers. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a good defender, though, so I'm not sure that it's a must-play situation. The same thing goes for Caldwell-Pope, he's at 5,600. He's been averaging 33 across his last three games, but he's got to face up with Avery Bradley. And he's a good defender as well. So those two might take it out of each other defensively and make it hard to use them in fantasy. Evan Turner, definitely getting more minutes with Marcus Smart out. He's averaging 26.10 across the last three games, which I don't think many people would be aware of. At 5,300, it's still probably not enough for me to really get overly excited about using him. The New York Knicks and the Minnesota Timberwolves is the next game. The Knicks are favored by 5.5 points. The total here is 200. Interesting to see what news we hear come out from the Timberwolves as to what they're doing with their starting lineup. And obviously that's going to play a part in how these minutes are distributed. But Gorgui Dieng at 4,500, I think, look, if he gives you 23 fantasy points, that's enough. That's value there. And if he could get 28 minutes, he could get 30 minutes. I really like Gorgui Dieng here. I think Carmelo Anthony at 8,400, he had a big game in the last one. Yes, he's had some struggles, but I think that this is not a difficult matchup for him. I think this is a pretty nice spot where he could give you a 40 or 45-point performance. Kristaps Porzingis has been down, massively down as of late. 6,300, the salary's come down as well. Not an easy matchup. The Timberwolves do defend power forwards pretty well, but I'm okay with getting him into a tournament lineup because we know that there's 40, 50-point upside perhaps with Kristaps. Robin Lopez, nah, even though he's 3,800, I can't bring myself to do that. Karl Anthony Towns at 7,100 has been playing really well. At 7,100, though, he needs to go for 35 points. And do we think he can do it? Yeah, we can, but there's always that risk associated with it, always. Andrew Wiggins at 6,500, the salary's come down, but it still hasn't come down enough for me to trust in him. And Zach LaVine at 5,700, I think he's an awesome play. He's averaging over 30 in the last three games. He's definitely in line for a bigger role. I think we can get all aboard the Zach LaVine train here and probably be massively disappointed because I've recommended it. The Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets are the next game. The Miami Heat are favored by 4, a very low total here of 190. Trade rumors abounding of Dwight Howard being swapped for Hassan Whiteside. I think there's very little chance of that happening. It's not affecting anything that's going to happen in this game, though. Josh McRoberts and Tyler Johnson have missed the last couple. McRoberts and Johnson. Well, Johnson thinks he'll play. McRoberts I'd be a little bit doubtful of. So if Tyler Johnson plays, that impacts what Gerald Green can do. Now, Gerald Green is still priced at only 4,000. So even if he gets 24 minutes at 4,000, he's shown an ability to be able to put up numbers that to get that salary or return value for that salary. So I don't hate using Gerald Green. I don't love it. But I think there's some merit to using him. Dwayne Wade at 6,900 has struggled. But I reckon this is a good match. Or not a reckon. I know this is a good matchup for him going up against the Nets. I'd be okay with getting him into some tournament lineups and hoping for a big Dwayne Wade game because they haven't been that rare this season. Brook Lopez at 7,600. He's going to be very lowly owned because he's been struggling. Now, the Whiteside factor is a concern. But I imagine that Lopez will get Whiteside into some foul trouble. We know he's a crafty offensive player, and I think that he'll be able to play Whiteside, not off the floor, but he'll be able to limit Whiteside's playing time, and I don't mind using Brook Lopez here. As for Whiteside, his salary has come down to 7,000, but he really hasn't been exceeding value in any of the last few games, so I can give him a miss. 5,700 for Goran Dragic. Nah, he's just too untrustworthy for me with what he's been doing. Jarrett Jack at 6,100, the Heat shut down. Guys, so I'm not loving that. Not loving Thad Young either at 7,000. And Chris Bosh at 7,700. I can get behind using Chris Bosh. He's averaging 36 points across his last three, so I think that he can be used in certain situations. Not a must play guy by any stretch, but not someone that we need to completely avoid. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Chicago Bulls are up next. The Bulls are favored by 3.5. The total here is 194.5. Derek Allen is a big Tony Allen is a big factor in this game. Not for himself, but if he doesn't play, Courtney Lee, Jeff Green, and Matt Barnes will all play mid to high 30s in minutes. Now, as it is, Jeff Green at 4,500, even if he gets low 30s minutes, I think that this is an okay matchup for him. Jimmy Barnes, I'm mixing all my names up today. Matt Barnes is averaging over 30 points in his last three. At 4,900, he's a good option. Courtney Lee is still at 3,900. He's giving you basically 19 points every game, and that's not terrible in cash games. You can probably do better than Courtney Lee. Green and Barnes are going to be better. But if Tony Allen's out, they're going to get much more run. Marc Gasol is facing a pretty easy fantasy matchup for him. 8,100. Put up 50 in the last game. Probably won't put up 50 again, but I reckon you can get 35 out of him, 36, and that's not a bad return. Derrick Rose is battling an illness. He will likely play, though, but at 6,100, he's strictly a tournament player. I don't think we can really rely too much upon him. As for the front court, Joakim Noah is averaging over 31 points at 5,300. Yep, I can get behind using him in the tournament. Same as Nikola Mirotic at 5,400. His per 36 numbers have been great. All it takes is for Fred Hoiberg to go, yeah, let's run him 26 minutes and he's going to smash value. But in a cash game, it's probably not the right way to go. Pau Gasol at 8,400, that's too expensive for me. And Mike Conley at 65, he put up 40 in the last game. Not a tough matchup fantasy-wise. Don't hate it. I think that he could be in for a decent night here. There's not a huge amount of must play guys though. I don't think tonight anyway. We'll see. But you're gonna have to sort of take a few risks, I think, and hope that some guys pan out. Cause there's not massive amounts of must play guys. For the next game, the Atlanta Hawks and the Philadelphia 76ers. Atlanta's favored by 13.5. The total is 198. Obviously, it's the Sixers, so blowout concerns do come into consideration. 6,900 for Al Horford. I reckon that's a pretty good play because, again, if he plays 29 minutes, that's probably enough. Jeff Teague at 6,100 has been really struggling. Don't know if his ownership will be very high, but I can get behind using him. And Paul Millsap at 8,300. He's probably the guy that I wouldn't want to use. That's a lot of salary to spend on a guy that could, you know, conceivably play 25 minutes. As for the Sixers, there's just a lot of mess happening there. Isaiah, this is the game that we finally should see what happens with the point guards. Tony Roten, Kendall Marshall, Isaiah Cannon, and TJ McConnell should all be ready to go. Means we probably want to avoid them all in daily fantasy, but it'd be interesting to see exactly how they run that rotation. Kent Bazemore starting again, 5,500. He's one of the better plays of the day, I think. And Bob Cove at 6,500, averaging 30 points across the last three games. probably want to steer clear of him. I'd rather spend $1,000 less and get Kent Bazemore, to be honest. Jahlil Okafor is averaging 35.5 across his last three. At 6,900, he looks to be a force at the moment. I'm definitely okay with running him out there. Nerlens Noel is out, so if you want a bit of a lottery ticket guy, maybe Jeremy Grant, maybe he goes and grabs you two steals and four blocks and has, you know, eight rebounds or something like that and really gets your number up there for whatever his salary is. Portland Trailblazers and the Oklahoma City Thunder is up next. The Thunder are 9.5-point favorites. The total is 209 on this one. Don't hate Steven Adams here. The Blazers do allow a lot of fantasy points to centers. He's priced at 4,100. He's averaging 29 minutes across his last three. He played 32 in the last one. If he gives you 23 points, it's enough. You're done. I think that he's a really decent play here. Serge Ibaka is 6,200. That's not a high salary for him. Can he give you 30 points? Yep, pretty comfortably. Kevin Durant at 10,300 is a guy that I love here. I think that's one of the better plays on the board, especially if you're looking for a high salary guy. Russ Westbrook at 10,800 has been playing as well, if not better than Durant. His minimum score over his last five games is 4,400, so he's a pretty solid cash game play. Whereas Damian Lillard at 9,200, don't hate it, especially going up against Russell Westbrook's defense. I think Lillard will be looking to put up some pretty big numbers here. CJ McCollum at 7,100. Not sure that he's someone I want to invest in too heavily. He is only averaging 31 across the last three. A really nice floor of 26, but it's not enough at 7,100, I don't think. The other guy, if you're looking down, 5,600 for Mason Plumlee. He's averaging 24. That's not terrible, but we know that he has a propensity for foul trouble, so that's not going to be a great matchup. Myers Leonard, we can leave alone. And Alan Crabb at 4,100. Averaging almost 24 across the last three, we can definitely use him. It wasn't as good in the last game. Maybe he bounces back. There is some merit in using Alan Crabb if you want to squeeze a few of those other high-priced guys into a lineup. The Washington Wizards and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs have just pummeled their last three opponents. They'll be looking for revenge on the Wizards, who actually beat them already earlier this year. This is not shaping up to be a game where I want any fantasy exposure. Maybe Danny Green at 3,600 in a tournament, but everyone else, I'm going to say forget it. 4,000 for Ramon Sessions, no, don't think so. John Wall at 9,600, definitely not against the Spurs. Gary Neal maybe at 4,000 in a tournament. Maybe, look, Sessions at 4,000 in a tournament is worth looking at as well. Kawhi Leonard at 8,800, that's a lot to spend on a guy who might play 26 minutes. Because they might just destroy them. And same as LaMarcus Aldridge, who is at 7,000, but he might get 27 minutes and not get enough, definitely not get enough playing time to warrant usage. This game in general, I think, is a pretty much an avoid sort of situation. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Utah Jazz is up next. The Jazz are favored by 4. The total is 204 in this one. Joe Ingles has been ruled out for the Jazz after some oral surgery. Doesn't really impact too much here. Rodney Hood is a guy that has struggled. He's had some big games and some poor games. At 4,300 though, this is a pretty tasty matchup for him. In a tournament, I reckon you can look at using him. And I reckon Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward will both look to bounce back after, especially Hayward, after some subpar performances against the San Antonio Spurs. Jrue Holiday, his restrictions are almost over. He played 29 minutes in the last game and popped 32 points on the board. He's averaging over 30 in his last three games. At 5,400, it's now time that we can start considering using him. Anthony Davis at 10,700 as well, I reckon, is pretty solid against a Rudy Gobert-less Utah Jazz. Tyreek Evans is averaging over 40 as well, 7,600. Very tough to go against him. He almost put up 50 in the last game. He just got basically straight back into the groove. Ryan Anderson at 6,400. No, not for me. I don't think that's a great spot. And Trevor Booker at 4,100 for the Jazz. Yeah, he's getting 25 minutes, but he's just not turning it into anything really productive at all. So I reckon you can do better off in other areas there. The next game is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 10.5. The total is 199.5 points. Greg Monroe is the one we need to check on for Milwaukee after missing Tuesday's action with that knee problem. If he's out, you'll see more John Henson, and inexplicably, you'll see more Miles Plumlee. If they're going to split minutes, I don't want anything to do with it. It's just not going to be easy enough for me to look at and go, yeah, that's going to be a great situation. I do like DeAndre Jordan, though, at 7,500. I think he's almost a lock to put up 30 points, and then he can easily get you 35. Blake Griffin at 9,400 should be able to clear 40 points pretty comfortably. He's averaging over 40 in the last three. OJ Mayo struggled in the last couple, but he's still only 4,900. Not as much of a must-play guy as he has been in the past. Chris Paul at 8,400. Probably not. You want him to get over 40, and I'm just not sure that he can do that. And Michael Carter-Williams is up to 5,700. I reckon he can be used. He put up 37 today, almost averaging 30 across the last three games. He can definitely be deployed with a relative degree of confidence. Giannis Antetokounmpo at 7,000. Yeah, I don't mind using him. I think there's something to be said for using Giannis, and not much else really appeals to me too much in that game. The Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors is the last game of the night. The Warriors are favored by 12.5. The total is 220. So there's the big risk here with the Warriors of guys sitting. Now, Klay Thompson I still like at 6,400, and I still like Steph Curry, even though he's priced at 11,100. But there's a little bit of risk involved there. Steph's averaging over 52 in the last three games. If Phoenix keeps this close, it's going to be a no-brainer to use him. Same with Klay at 6,400, I think. John Lua at 5,000 is one of the better value plays on the board. He's averaging 28 points in his last three games. At 5,000, that's more than enough there. And Draymond Green at 8,800, he's almost at 9,000, but he's giving you value that's $9,000. He's averaging 45 points across his last three games. Not sure that I want to spend 9,000 on Draymond here. I would rather spend my 11,000 on Steph Curry. I think you get more bang for your buck there, hopefully. Eric Bledsoe is now a $9,200 player. He is averaging close to 50 in his last three, but I'm not sure that I want to spend $9,200 on Eric Bledsoe. The Alex Len, Tyson Chandler front court conundrum means I'm going to stay away from both of those guys here. And Andre Iguodala at 5,100, averaging 29 across the last three. A pretty easy matchup for small forwards going up against the Suns. So he can be used with a relative degree of confidence. And if you want a punt play for a center, Festus Ezeli is averaging 23 points across his last three games at only 4,800. That's not bad value. So I think that you can look to use Festus Ezeli in some tournament options. All right, let's bring up the daily fantasy plays of the day. All right, at point guard, we've got Jeremy Lin at 4,700, Michael Carter-Williams at 5,700, and Steph Curry at 11,100. Shooting guards, Rod Hood at 4,300, Klay Thompson at 6,400, and 8,300 for Jimmy Butler. At small forward, 4,500 for Jeff Green, 6,700 for Gordon Hayward, and Kevin Durant at 10,300, or as I've written there on the screen, Kevin, without an I. At power forward, Cody Zeller, 3,900, John Lua, 5,000, and Derek Favors at 7,700. And for the centers, Steven Adams, 4,100, Al Horford, 6,900, and DeAndre Jordan, 7,500. Guys, that is it for today's podcast. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Basketball Monster is Bask Monster, and basketballmonster.com as well. And of course, check out things happening over at Hardwood Paroxysm. If you could leave a review, it would be awesome. Thank you to everyone who has done that. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.